This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Green New Deal, part of the larger picture called Build Back Better for the Biden administration. Concentrating on the Green New Deal part of it and also talking about the intention to now revive Build Back Better with what is apparently an acceptable form of Build Back Better Jr. to two Democratic senators. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution first to help me through the Build Back Better and Build Back Better Jr. recommendations by the Democratic majority in the Senate and the House. And then the road ahead for the Green New Deal, given the changes that we believe are underway. It's all a moving story, so I thank the professor. Richard, a very good evening to you. What we have now is news that is all brittle and in a moving story. The American economy is or is not in recession. However, at the same time, jobs keep being added, and sometimes those jobs are spectacular, as most recently additions. So all of that is a mixed environment for Build Back Better and Build Back Better Jr. What is your measure of most recently the Professor Alan Blinder of Princeton University, former member of the Federal Reserve Board, commenting that the tax increases in Build Back Better and Build Back Better Jr. are not determinative, will not damage the economy, and are needed in order to pay for important Green New Deal programs and elsewhere? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, first of all, I think there's several points to be made. There's a real question exactly what the size of the tax increases are. In Alan Blinder's article, he puts the number about 50 million, whereas it turns out that most people have put numbers that are 6 or 7 times larger than that. And so just as a straight factual matter, when you have a moving target, you actually have to figure out what the number is. But the second question is, it's not just a question of tax revenues. It's a question of the form of the taxation. And for many, many years, indeed my entire professional life, I've always been sort of an Adam Smith buff on this, and I believe in flat taxes. So if you want to raise revenues, the correct way to raise them is to raise them on across-the-board taxes. But this is simply something which is going to be heavily concentrated on the rich. And so you then have the distributional side that you like, but also the unhappy consequence that the heaviest taxes are going to be placed on the most productive parts of society, so that you have to worry about the impact on overall growth and overall size of the economy being based upon the malapportioned tax that is going to be proposed. And the larger the tax, of course, the worse that this is going to be. So the second thing is, why is it that we regard all these other programs as essential is always a mystery. No matter how many times we increase the size of the transfer budget, there's always somebody who's going to say, we have to do it more. And there's an explanation for that. As you start to increase the size of the transfer budget, what you do is you reduce the amount of available capital that is open for new ventures and so forth. Wages are capital, are complementary to capital investments. And so as you start to increase the transfer payment, you will reduce the wages. The moment you start to reduce the wages, then it puts you into the position where now you have to have a larger set of transfer payments. And the way to get rid of this problem is to go in the opposite direction, is to reduce the tax burden and to start to increase investment, and you'll get better employment. That was the strategy that was undertaken by Trump in 2017. And notwithstanding all the boo birds, I think it was clear that he was right. The largest gains actually went to the bottom segment of the workforce for the simple reason that since their taxes were reduced, it turns out people were more willing to hire them. So I think the whole thing is going in the wrong direction. And the only debate between Semina on the one hand and the other Democrats on the other is whether or not this is a really big loss or a somewhat smaller loss. But the only thing you're trying to do here, in my view, is to cut down on the damages. This is nothing which is going to improve overall the size of the economy. There's also another problem, which is you constantly mismatch the payment of benefits with the collection of taxes. I taught for many years and still do teach courses in public utilities. And one of the rules that you want to do is to always say the following, is that you're never going to pay for some increased benefit to consumers out of taxes that are going to be levied in some future year. What you have to do is to keep everything on the integrity for each calendar period. Otherwise, what you do is you just run up enormous benefits and you'll never never be able to increase the taxes in future periods and still, or the rates, and still keep things constant. And what the Democrats are doing is they're playing with the timing element of all of this. And that's going to introduce all sorts of skews because there's too much slippage that could take place. Further legislation can happen. The economy could go into the tank or it could boom. You just don't want to put yourself at the position where you have these maladministrations and so forth. So that's what I think is wrong with the tax side. But the rest of the bill, John, correct me if I'm wrong, is something that also talks about various transfer payments on the one hand and union preferences on the other. And all of those things, it seemed to me, are going to be unbalanced negatives.
The editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, Professor Blinder mentions, has argued that the 15% minimum tax, which is part of Build Back Better and the new version of Build Back Better, is especially harmful to U.S. manufacturing firms. That's the argument for the Wall Street Journal. And the Professor Blinder contends that that is not accurate. He makes this general point. First, higher taxes on capital distort corporate decision making, but in the direction of using more labor, not less. So what does it mean, distort corporate decision making? That means makes the leadership anxious about hiring.
What happens is the standard that he's using is that in a non-tax world, you'd like to figure out what the mix is between capital and labor. And ideally, you would like that mix to remain the same once you put yourself into a tax world. And anytime you tax either capital or labor, you're going to create a distortion because you're going to upset the balance between the two. He says it's just fine to upset the balance in favor of labor. And that's absolutely wacky. As far as I'm concerned, you can have huge distortions in favor of labor. That's going to increase prices very substantially, going to hurt consumers. Your consumers of today are your employers of today as well. So it's the same people in different roles. You don't want to have either of these kinds of distortions. And so to say that one kind is good and the other kind is bad is to simply say it's better to die, from cyanide poisoning on the one hand than from a guillotine on the other. You don't want to put yourself into that kind of position. You'd like to keep it neutral. So I've always taken the view that taxes that should be flat over a broad base of income so as to minimize the total size of the taxes and to prevent any of the distortions that would otherwise start to take place. And Blinder is somebody who is too clever by half. He's always saying, well, I could put a tax here and a subsidy there and we'll be better off by the combination that we had of neither the tax nor the subsidy. And generally speaking, whenever you try to play that games, you're going to be wrong in one direction or the other. Rarely do these things cancel out. In the end, what you do is you have two negatives rather than one plus and one negative.
The second point the professor makes in general about tax hikes, the corporate tax rate is a low multiplier policy, one with relatively small effects on GDP and jobs. One reason is that raising the corporate rate increases taxes on returns from past and future investments alike, but higher taxes don't prevent past investments.
Well, I mean, it's no good to tax past income. That's a retroactive tax, which means in the future, everybody will know that the current statement is not a legitimate statement because you still have the ace in the hole and can pass some kind of another tax. So I think, in fact, that's just another piece of cleverness that you really don't want to have. You make the system less transparent. People are going to see uncertainty. And when they see uncertainty, they're going to be unwilling under these circumstances to do anything that makes sense. So I regard this as, again, more intellectual hocus pocus. What you want to do is to have one very simple metric, broad-based, flat taxes, no gimmicks, and then let the allocations take place by market forces. This is not going to do that. So my net prediction is going to be is that far from increasing GDP, far from reducing the deficit, what this thing will do is have the opposite effect. It will increase the deficit and reduce GDP.
And the Internal Revenue Service, Professor Blinder writes, more than a quarter of the new revenue comes from increased Internal Revenue Service enforcement of the existing tax code. Additional revenue from enforcement isn't a tax hike. It's collecting more of what Congress has already legislated. He's not asserting illegality. He's asserting that loopholes must be closed. Is that, I've heard this many times the last 30 years.
Well, there are two issues and you have to separate them. A loophole is something that is essentially a bad economic policy, but sanctioned by the law. Evasion is where you duck paying a tax where you owe. And the enforcement wing of the IRS can only deal with the illegal collection. But put it to this way, suppose it turns out that there are people who manage to escape tax illegally, and they get a higher rate of return from what they do. It's really complicated what's going to happen, because now if you start to close down this particular loophole, what you're going to see somewhere else is that somebody is going to have to pay a higher tax or get services at a higher rate, and you'll slow down the economy. So closing some of these loopholes down may be a very fine thing, but what's really complicated is there are probably many businesses that can only survive to the extent that there's some degree of illegality associated with their operation. And if that's the case, then closing the loophole will raise revenues, but it will not be the fantasy world in which you could raise revenues and not see any loss in income at some sector within the economy, either by the person who is now subject to the increased tax or the other person. There's also another problem. I have had some business with the IRS. As best I can tell, the level of competence inside the IRS, not so much on complicated business transactions, but on routine enforcement, they are the most abysmally incompetent operation, and it's gotten much worse in the last several years, even on routine things. There's no effort in this program to figure out, well, what you're supposed to do to take the money that you have and improve the way in which we operate these services. So one of the things that you could get out of this is you'll get a very aggressive IRS, and what they'll do is they'll engage in efforts at overtaxation on people and try to say that certain deductions which were legitimate were not legitimate. You can't simply assume that when you change an organization like that, what they're going to do is get only the money they deserve and never try to claim the money that they don't deserve. You run some of these intensive audits, you could put businesses out of commission for a very long time trying to answer these things. And then folks are going to be very reluctant to claim legitimate deductions if they think that they could be challenged. The world has uncertainty in it. It has administrative imperfections. And to sort of assume that a massive increase, which is going to require restructuring, rehiring, retraining people, is going to have only positive results is just a fantasy. I'm not saying that we shouldn't increase the budget, but to treat tax reform as being tied to this particular situation is a bit of idle fantasy. You could not get this stuff into place and get it working for several years. And in the meantime, what you're going to do is see massive uncertainty on the part of people, which will probably reduce legitimate investments as well as illegitimate ones.
I'm speaking with Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow for the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, responding to an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal by Professor Alan Blinder about the tax increases that are involved with initially Build Back Better and now the Inflation Reduction Act, which is a compromise between the Senate majority and the Senate majority. We turn, however, to the question of the Green New Deal, a driver for both pieces of legislation, and what we've learned from observing the crisis of energy in Europe compared to our bounty of energy sources. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.